Welcome to our audience. This is again Moses Chavi, your host on Suits and Sandals, the Leadership and Legacy podcast. Today, I will be discussing about the quest to build big enterprises with a unique focus on Malawi, but the message basically will resonate with all the other developing economies. And my guest today is Bright Chidzumeni. I know Bright as a business advisor, as a coach, as a trainer, as a techie. He's basically just energetic about innovation and creativity. And when I spoke to Bright last time, I could not hold myself from recognizing the depth of his knowledge, a rich background. And I believe that what he carries is beyond a one-on-one discussion. I wanted him to be heard by our audience. And today I'm hosting him. It's a delight, and I believe that you're going to benefit from our discussion. Bright, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Moses. I'm delighted to be on this podcast with you.
Awesome, awesome. So many people know you as Bright, just that guy who is so enthusiastic about business, or as a social media influencer, because you don't actually relent on advising, even giving free advice when it comes to economics, business, or in particular, entrepreneurship. But if you want someone to define you, or to actually say, who is Bright Chidzumeni? Who are you? How do you want to introduce yourself to our audience?
If anybody out there would want to really know who Bright is, or remember Bright for something, then it should be that Bright is an individual who is geared to make an impact. Oh, by then they would say Bright was a person who was geared to make an impact. But if I were to put it in a more professional way, I would say Bright is a budding billionaire. There's no crime thinking big, right?
Good one.
It's a budding billionaire. But I'm basically a person who is interested in business, economics, innovation, and technology. I have written about 6 books in business, personal development. Those have been my areas of focus in all the books that I've written. I have 3 innovation awards to my name, starting from my time in the university when I was doing my undergrad to today. I have about 3 innovation awards. And in total, with other type of awards, I should have about 4 awards.
Wow.
Yeah. Briefly, that's Bright. But yeah, I want to be known as an individual who came into the world and make an impact to his world. That's awesome. Bright.
Man, that's great. Quite incredible. And when people see you talking about business, sometimes what happens is, especially in our context, people don't get to appreciate the journey that you have gone through. So sometimes when people meet you, what I always say is it's better to let people know about your journey or your trail, so that they can appreciate when you speak, they know where the content is coming from, they know where the pains of life and the reflection of what you're trying to push people to also become is coming from. So just in brief, would you be comfortable to give people a background of what you have been through in terms of your academics, your journey outside the country, and what you're working on now in Malawi?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think I'll just focus at my tertiary type of education. So before I went to university, University of Malawi Polytechnic, I did a diploma in business information systems. That's where I developed my passion for computers and technology. And then I went to the University of Malawi, the Polytechnic, in 2011. It should be 2010-2011 academic year, where I enrolled in Bachelor of Science in Technical Education Vocation, graduated in 2015, and in 2018, I enrolled in a master's degree in Entrepreneurship and Innovation at University of Sussex in the UK. And along the process, I did some other certificates in economics, in programming, a couple of professional development courses just to improve my skills and knowledge in a couple of things. Wow. Yeah, so briefly, that should be my education background.
That's quite a rich background, and it also brings much depth to what you're passionate about today. And there's been an initiative that I've seen you running and doing. I picked it from Facebook. I mean, Facebook is a wonderful platform. We literally get into each other's closets, but you've been very busy on the quest to train Malawian SMEs, our sort of startups, to build some sort of resilient frameworks. And I've seen you even encouraging the younger generation or the groupings of women or the youth of Malawi for you to be able to offer free business advice. I'm just curious, what do you envisage as the probable outcome of this project in the both near and long term?
Well, before even venturing into that, I would have to mention that sometimes people fail to recognize big things and small things. So when you see a budding entrepreneur, a young graduate, young woman, person living in the rural areas trying to build a small startup, we don't see something big out of that. But there are these small things that eventually become big. Like someone may start with, someone may buy a car today to be doing car hiring. You don't see a fleet of cars in future, you know, but it is important for people to see that there's something big out of a small thing. Yeah. So when we talk about empowering SMEs, giving advisory to startups, it's all about knowing that there is a future we have to build. The long-term goal in this is to see conglomerates blossoming in Malawi that would add value to the economy of the country. Because national building begins with the startups that we see today, right? On these social platforms, we talk about how Facebook started, how Google started. All these companies started in a garage, some in a dorm room. But today, they're big corporations that are generating billions for the American economy, you know? But that started small. So when we are empowering SMEs and startups, what we're looking at is national building. It starts from there. We are looking at economic growth for the country. That's the long-term goal. And that begins with empowering these startups that we have today, because they will grow to that level. If they do not get the capacity development that they need to get, then they won't get there. I mean, the American economy is different from a Malawian economy, you know? And the way the American economy is run in terms of the entrepreneurial ecosystem is you have a lot of support systems that are already existing. You have investors that are looking for big opportunities to invest money into. It's already set. You have universities that already have facilities. They already have programs to empower young people to build business. It's already there. So it's easy. But in Malawi, someone would graduate university without actually knowing how to develop a business plan, you know, without knowing how a balance sheet looks like, you know. At times, if in a worst case scenario, I should say, you find someone who graduated from a business degree not knowing how to develop a business plan. That can happen, right? So, when we are doing these things, honestly, we are looking at how we can support each other as young entrepreneurs to build businesses that can grow beyond the scope of Malawi, beyond the scope of Africa, because that is very possible, you know, that is very possible. Now we are reading stories of startups in Nigeria, startups in Kenya, startups in Ghana that are attracting investments worth over $200 million from American investors. This is happening because the economies in these countries have been able to be remodeled in a way that mirrors the American way of doing things. Because America is really good in empowering young people to be enterprising. And that's what we need to emulate. And that's what I see as a long-term goal, building enterprises that add value to the economy of the country. And in a short-term basis, I look at startup entrepreneurs creating jobs for themselves and also creating jobs for others. You know, if I start a small business today, I have already created a job for myself. If that small enterprise grows, it means I'll employ other people to join me in what I'm doing. You see, I mean, when I started, I'll talk about my business background later. But when I started, it was just me and my co-founder. And later we managed to employ some people on temporary basis to run what we do together with them, you know. So from me and my friend, we added a couple of more people to help us run that enterprise. But that didn't just happen without having the knowledge, without having the wisdom to run that enterprise. So when I'm doing all these trainings and offering advice, I'm trying to help young people create employment for themselves and create employment for others. Number one. And number two, I'm also trying to ensure that they create solutions to different problems in our society. You know, there are some things that you do as an entrepreneur which do not necessarily generate money, but they make an impact, right? Yeah. That's value on its own. That's value on its own. So when while you are in the process of building an enterprise, you can create solutions that may indirectly, of course, generate revenue to you or for you, but they are basically just solutions that are making an impact in a society, right?
Yeah.
When I started my business and we created an e-learning platform, we have functions on the platform, we have resources on the platform which can be accessed for free. So those resources are useful to a certain group of people, but we're not making money out of them. We just created the solution to make an impact in a society. And that's also an advantage of empowering young people, to training young people to build their enterprises. They're able to create solutions.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in the short-term basis, that's what I see happening, creating jobs for themselves, for others, and just solving problems in the society using their knowledge, using their intellectual property, especially graduates. They have vast amounts of knowledge. They have the capacity to create solutions to problems. And that's what they need to do. They may not make money out of it, but it's a solution. And some solutions can generate money after a while. You may realize that, oh, I can actually make money out of this. I was just creating this as a solution to a problem, but I can actually make money out of it. Yeah, so those are my long and short-term goals in what I do, honestly.
Perfect. Oh, man, that's so good. And someone listening to us may say, but touting Silicon Valley as a good model that can be replicated into Malawi, like what Kenya has done with Silicon Savannah. Capitalism is going to come and swallow all the small enterprises, or it's going actually to create a big boom of people who are trying to just live large, and you know, it's going to bring the chaos that we've seen in the West. I don't know if you've ever thought about it. Is there a way where we can actually balance or model our local and traditional crafts and enterprises and create a hybrid with the Silicon Venture type, where we say we can still promote aggressive entrepreneurship without destroying our cultural values as a nation? Do you see that happening when we pull the investors into Malawi?
Yeah, you know, I go with a philosophy. This is my personal philosophy. This is what I say. I say, I've learned the effect of transforming my world, and I have resolved that I'm not intending to just leave a legacy. I'm intending to leave a legacy. I'm not intending to influence my generation. I'm intending to influence generations. So what I try to mean by that is everybody who is trying to reach higher goals, whether it's making a lot of money, whether it's popularity, the end goal is not in that itself as making money or being popular, but it is what you do with that. You get what I mean? So if I am striving to be a billionaire, the intention shouldn't just end with, I have made billions and I'm living large. Should be, what impact am I going to make in my world with the status of being a billionaire? So simply the understanding is that as we are promoting entrepreneurship, as we are encouraging young people to be aggressive, make money, build enterprises, become billionaires. On the other hand, what we're telling them is the intention is not just for you to enjoy life, but to make an impact. This is where I have to mention about the importance of capitalism. You know, there are capitalists who actually make socialism possible. Because, you know, some people, they stand against capitalism and they go for socialism. But when you look at these two school of thoughts, you realize that it's actually capitalism that empowers socialism. I mean, Bill Gates today can give $10 million. That's an amount of money that goes into socialism. you know, that make an impact in the world. It may go to supporting school children somewhere, you know, it may go to a poor country somewhere to try to combat diseases. But he is a capitalist.
Yeah.
He is a capitalist. He made his money, billions of money, but now he's using the money to support social interventions. And to balance the two, capitalism and socialism in a society, or as you put it, to create a hybrid ecosystem, I see it is possible. So long as we are mentoring entrepreneurs, we are able to tell them that the end goal of this is not just for us to live large and enjoy life, but to make an impact in our world, is to grow our economy. That's a understanding that each one of us needs to have, that we are playing a part in growing our economy and in solving problems in our society. So people should be able to pursue their entrepreneurial goals and at the back of the mind know that as an entrepreneur, you are a person who creates solutions. That's what an entrepreneur is. You know, that's what an entrepreneur is. And creating solutions doesn't end with just solutions that make money, but solutions that transform lives. Yeah, so it is a possibility. And this can be blended into the ecosystem. It's very easy. You know, there was a time, should be 2-3 years ago, where among the billionaires, they made a promise that they are going to give away up to 90% of their money to charity. Yeah. All of them signed an agreement that that's what they're going to do. How did they come to that conclusion? Somebody just came up with an idea of the importance of doing that. And it's pretty much the same that can be done in the context of Malawi. You know, in Malawi, we have incubators blossoming up. We have business coaches blossoming up. It's an idea that can come into that crop of people to say, you know what, as we go about empowering young people to build enterprises, one thing that we should make certain to them is that the intention is not just for us to make money, but we should have this ideology in our mind that we are trying to build a nation. We are trying to solve problems in our society. We are trying to create a better world. That's where I see this happening. And it's possible. It's very possible to create a hybrid entrepreneurial ecosystem.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't know if I've quite answered your question well.
You have, you have. And a thought just dropped in my mind to say that at the center of every person's quest for excellence, there's always a deeper need to be significant, to make more money, to be financially free. So even for people who would actually sit in circles where we actually accuse or say bad things about capitalism, each one of us, if we are given an opportunity to create an abnormal enterprise, which will make us billions, would actually jump into the opportunity and do it without even looking back.
Yeah, people demonize capitalism, but it runs the world. runs the world. Yeah, there will be no money for socialism without capitalism. Never. There's no way. Where are you going to get the money? Someone has to generate that money through a certain creation. So if each one of us were given a chance to come up with a brilliant idea that can generate money, we'd want to do it. We would want to pursue that idea. Absolutely. And sometimes these capitalists, they make a lot of money, not because they are trying to take advantage of people. Look at Google. How many free things does Google offer? A lot of systems, they are freely available to users by Google. But yes, it makes a lot of money, but it also creates solutions for people. And through them also, they're able to take some portions of their money just to support people. Social investment. Yeah, so capitalism shouldn't be demonized. It's a good thing. It's an absolutely good thing. Yeah.
Agreed. And taking that conversation back home again, I should say I have my own principle when it comes to, do I move an agenda online on social media to change the dynamics of a political system, or do I take my message to the right people so that they can act on it? Even if I advise them in a closet, can they take that to the parliament? Can they take it to the OPC? So I do believe that there's a balance of both, that our messages need to continue influencing on social media, but there are also other subjects which we need to be able to take directly to to the people who are in the decision circles. So if you think about the most hot subject when it comes to Malawian talk, people say, no, we make a lot of noise on social media, but we are not the main influencers when it comes to voting, for example, and we are not the main influencers in parliament, right? So if we truly have to make a sustainable impact on the small enterprises, so here we're talking about the mamas and papas at Tsangano, or the brilliant young men that we see at Biwi Triangle in Lilongwe, into future powerhouses. What do you believe are some of the practical steps that the government, the private sector, or local Malawian investors can take to help these small enterprises?
Interesting. Well, that question, first of all, for me, I think the jurisdiction, first of all, is within the bosom of the small enterprises themselves. Why am I saying so? Because sometimes they may suffer because they are not well structured. So it's important, first of all, that the small enterprises are able to understand the importance of coming up with a good structure. Things like business registration, you know, having the right registrations with the business authorities in the country helps in structuring the enterprise. I'll give an example. If there is a welder somewhere in Biwi Triangle, right? And the government wants to procure some window panes, for example, window panes. And all they require is someone to be skilled in that job. This is something that someone, a welder in Biwi Triangle probably does. But they will not be able to be considered. Why? Because they do not have the right registration. If they do, they do not register their business, how will they apply? They can't. If they do not have tax clearance, they can't. If they do not have a bank account, how can the government consider them? So I think what is very important, first of all, is for the small businesses to become well structured, to be formalized. If they become formal, it's one way towards receiving the right support, because there are some things that even right now, without even thinking about the government, they can take advantage of, but they are not, because they're not formal enterprises. So that's what I would think is the very first thing that small enterprises need to do. They should become formal enterprises. Number one. Yeah, so if I have to mention the responsibility of the government is really just responsible for ensuring that there's a conducive environment for business development. And that is up to the policies that they come up with. And currently, we have a policy that has been established by the government for small enterprises. And like I said about SMEs being formalized, they may not be able to take advantage of this arrangement that the government has now because they are not formalized. They need to. So with this new arrangement that the government has put across, they have put an exemption for certain services and products to be supplied by MSMEs only. So big enterprises are not supposed to take advantage of those business opportunities, but MSMEs only. That's an example of a policy that a government can come up with. And I would add to that policy, which the government has come up with now, with tax cuts for new businesses. So if I have just established a business today, I've graduated from university, and say I'm a business information system graduate, right? I'm a computer scientist, and I want to establish an enterprise where I'll be offering my services in website development, software development, things like those. The government should be able to give tax exemptions for maybe up to 2 years or 3 years for a startup. So they may have a way of monitoring these things to see, okay, when did this particular individual graduate from the university? And they should track the time from when they established the enterprise and the time that they've been running the enterprise to get this exemption. What my thought is on this tax exemption is this. Usually, and this I'm saying from experience, usually when you've just started, you make little monies, but you also want to take advantage of procurement contracts. You know, you want to take part in offering your bids, but without issues of tax clearance and paying taxes, you may not be selected. You do not stand a chance. But what I'm thinking is, if you are given tax exemptions for 3 years, at least you are able to have more money, right, to invest back into the business. And at an elapse of 3 years, with the tax that you would have paid, which you didn't pay, the business would have grown. It's like you're giving a leverage to the business to grow faster because you have more capital to invest back into the business. You get what I mean? So at an elapse of 3 years, if you are able to be successful at winning bids by the government, by some from the private sector as well, at least you have more money to invest back into the business and the business would have grown. And after that period of time, now the government can start demanding tax from you. And it will be at a time where the business now is stable. But usually the small businesses, at an elapse of 3 years, most of them would have died already. The government would have taken their taxes, but the business would have died, right? Yeah, so that's a policy which I think the government can establish just to help small businesses grow. And at the end of the day, they win after a certain period of time. For the investors, I also have an experience with investors. Usually, when an investor wants to put money into a startup in Malawi, the shareholding capacity they request is ridiculous. Like, they don't look at the fact that if they put their money into the small business, it will grow. And they will, after the company grows with their investment, they may be able to feel that satisfaction that I've been able to empower an enterprise to grow, that has been able to create jobs, that have been able to make an impact in the world. All they look at is what's in it for me. And what I want has to be big enough. So you'd see an investor putting in 10 million and they want 50% ownership of the business. Like, that's so frustrating. I had an experience where an investor wanted 75%. Like,
oh man,
the business is no longer mine. If you're taking 75% shareholding capacity, then it's no longer mine.
That's madness, so, yes.
Exactly. So what investors need to do is to understand that the investment that they make into one little booming startup is an investment into themselves. Because if this small enterprise become an international corporation, then obviously you're talking about the economy of the country changing, right?
Yeah.
There's a change in the economy of the country because of this enterprise that has grown to generate revenue from other nations. So this one little enterprise has become a big international corporation and generating lots of money for the country. That's a win for me because it means the government will have good roads. It means the government will have good hospitals. That kind of thinking sometimes is missing in the investors that we have in Malawi. So for me, what I think investors can do is to see beyond themselves, to see the change that can come from empowering one startup in a country. That's what I would say. It's a support that investors can give to small enterprise. Just take a small share. And this share shouldn't be eternal. Like, you know, like if you say you inject 10 million into an enterprise, you can just ask for a return of that investment. Maybe after 5 years, it could be after 2 years, could be after 3 years. I mean, it depends with the agreement that you may have. But you should, at the end of the day, take out all your shares and leave that company back to 100%. Put that money into another startup. You know, that's kind of arrangement that I think is more ideal in helping our economy grow, because the economy has to grow. And those who have money need to give money to those who have ideas. And sometimes those who have money may not have ideas. And those that have ideas do not have money.
Usually.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other support that I think you mentioned about the private sector. The private sector, I think, is a principle that I called an adoption technique. So if I am a big engineering company, right, I have won so many contracts, I've done a lot of projects, I should be able to support some booming startups and subcontractors. That way I'm helping that small business to grow because I'm giving it business. On their own, small businesses struggle, really. They struggle to make business. They struggle to get contracts. But if big corporations in the private sector can support small businesses and subcontract, they'll help them. You know, so you should be able to see that kind of an arrangement in the adoption technique. So win big contracts and then engage young entrepreneurs, you know, for an engineering company, for example, can get us a young entrepreneur who had just started, maybe to supply sand, maybe to supply cement blocks, maybe to do a little small thing, a construction project. So such kind of arrangements, I see them really helping SMEs and startups to grow.
And that also goes along with the mindset change, right? Because if you think about our sort of economy, even the companies that we call big enterprises, but they are more like family businesses, the issue remains that if I get a contract, it's basically me, but it needs to be injected into our DNA to say that apart from my family business, we are building a nation here. So I need to consider those other small enterprises, not just as my competitors, but as partners in the developmental agenda of the country.
Yeah.
So that's the only time that you can actually free up your resources or free up your acumen or knowledge or connections to benefit those small enterprises as well.
Yeah. And no matter how selfish you may be, you cannot get all the opportunities that may be available at any point in time.
Exactly.
It's not possible. So there's no harm supporting a small enterprise. There's no harm. There's no harm at all.
There's another interesting side of life, Bright. I worked as an internal auditor for investment banks and sovereign wealth funds. So in the investment banking arena, there's a common analogy of a green field and a brown field, meaning that you can invest in an existing company that's already making profits, or you can invest in from ground zero. So you build an enterprise from ground zero as an investment bank. So I was actually thinking, with our type of environment, we see so many people coming together and pooling funds, just as maybe, you know, you are some sort of alumni from whatever school, or you were classmates in 1998 or in 2006, whenever, and you bring your money together. Most of these groups, as much as we have lots of them in Malawi right now, most of them don't really have the ideas. Coming back to your point of people have money, but they don't have ideas. Or they indeed have money, but they don't have time to manage an investment. And yet, in the same economy, we have all these small enterprises who may not be making much. Probably maybe their total annual revenues would be around 100 million or 200 million, but they have a scalability where such pooled funds, if they are placed or they are used to support these small enterprises, all these ladies and gentlemen who are pulling their finances, they can actually build massive enterprises with these brilliant ladies and gentlemen who already have something small. Do you think that's something that can work for our sort of economy? And for you as a business advisor, have you seen that happening? Or is it something that you can promote?
Yes, it's something that I can promote, but the biggest challenge that I've seen in the entrepreneurial ecosystem in Malawi is business partnerships usually don't work. And this is because there's an engraved thinking in our DNA where we want to be kings of our own. So even though we come together to build something, everyone is thinking first of all about themselves, is thinking of their big name, is thinking of being known as so-and-so who did this, not them who did this. So that challenge still exists even within groups. So even though they go into groups, I may have a big idea, like this is a brilliant idea that can generate lots of money, but I'll not bring it to the group because I'm thinking, oh no, I want to be known as the person who brought this thing into fruition. So, but the challenge is I struggle to find money to invest into that idea, you know? And at the end of the day, the group lacks ingenious ideas that can actually use the money that's already available. So it's possible, but that's the challenge, brother. That's the challenge.
Yeah, and the why not take the funds and go out to the existing enterprises? because you have all these guys who are working hard. They have provable business concepts and they are making money. They are making money.
Yes. Yeah. And that's something that is ideal to do, because you already have a feasible business model, something that is already working. All you've got to do is put money in there. But you're just pulling money together, and at the end of the day, it just turns out to be a grouping of people who loan each other money. That kind of an arrangement.
And they love each other.
And they love each other and support each other in that sense, not actually putting the money to use. So what I think is necessary to do is to come to a place of understanding each other, knowing that coming together and doing things together brings more value than having an individualistic thinking. Because if we pull all resources together, pull all our intelligence together, pull all our strengths together to run something, there is more chance that that thing will succeed than having my own head running a certain enterprise on my own, soliciting resources on my own. It'll be harder, right?
It'll be harder.
So it's just like you mentioned about mindset change. These groups need to, first of all, orient one another, sit each other down. Ladies and gentlemen, what we are going to gain from doing things together is more than what each one of us can do on their own, because we'll put more resources together. We'll put all our intelligence together, all our strength, all our knowledge that we've gained from multiple sources together. Yeah. And there's a chance this thing work, and the dividends are high because there's a chance this thing may grow faster. See,
exactly.
That kind of understanding needs to be there. Number two, there is a need to structure. These groups need to structure themselves in a way that they should have a special department or certain individuals who go out to search for business opportunities, right? Mm. You have to search for business opportunities. And this comes back to an example you gave, like there are already small businesses that are on the ground. They have a proven business model that's working. You don't have to worry about what business can I invest into. Invest into these people. Put the money there. Yeah, because it will grow. It's proven. You see there's opportunity. There's a gap in the market. You see that they are making money. And all they need is more resources, more monetary resource. Yeah. Just put the money there and that's it.
And it's a more exciting model because, again, going back to investment banking, we're talking about either I go for private equity where just a few people invest in this growth startup, or you choose to go on the stock market where you're going to have thousands owning a singular entity. So here, I think in Malawi, we stand a big chance of investing just as three private equity investors and making huge returns when this company triples its bottom line, isn't it?
It seems like people don't see that, you know?
But you know what?
People don't see that.
I stand corrected because I'm in some of these groups myself.
Okay.
And what I've learned also in the Malawian context, because most of the people who are pulling funds together, they are working in other organizations. They have a job. They have a day job.
The reality
of, if we are so excited putting money together to create a company, who is going to resign finally to lead this business?
Yeah.
No one wants to resign.
And that's why you see, I mean, like the approach of taking these monies and investing into small businesses is ideal, because if no one wants to quit their job, if you come up with your own business idea, who's going to run the business? Someone has to run on the ground. Someone has to run on the ground. It's not easy to build a business from ground up. It's not easy. Here you have a chance of someone who already started, proven business model. Just put the money there because you don't want to quit your job.
And we bring in someone like you to say that, Bright, I have found a brilliant welding business and I want you to assess their financials, to assess the sort of management they have and see if they are credible enough and what sort of contracts I want to have in place so that I can protect my investment. Pretty much, right?
Pretty much, yeah, pretty much. Because I think the worry for some is if we invest into a local enterprise, a small business, they have fears of they'll probably just misuse the money and then we lose everything. But then that's why there's an issue of business valuation. You do a valuation of the business and you set up strategies to protect the investment. That's all you need to do. So the moment you start thinking risk, you dwindle yourself from thinking about the opportunity that might be there. So the thinking should be, how can we protect the investment, right? Yeah. How valuable is the enterprise? You look at those things. The things that a lot of these groups may not consider most of the time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I'm enjoying this discussion and I would take actually forever, Bright. But I don't want you to leave before you address two very important things.
Okay.
One, if we really have to talk about productivity and growth of our small enterprises, the reality is Malawi is a heavy importer and we are always on the negative. So we truly need to create enterprises that can start to export heavily, and we need to attract heavy forex reserves into the country, right?
Yep.
If you have a message to any aspiring MSMEs or people, indeed creators, innovators, entrepreneurs who are pretty much just aspiring to be in that sport, where can we start from? So dreaming big to go beyond our borders, where do we start from? How do we bring these enterprises up? I know you've touched randomly on this, but I want you to have like a central message of how should we move from now?
It's simple. Innovation. That's it. It's innovation. If we really want to move small enterprises to become big corporations that are able to cut on imports, you know, and increase exports, that's your question, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yes. Then we are looking at innovation. That's what we're looking at. Small enterprises need to be quite ambitious in their product and service development. We have to be able to develop products that are marketable within our country, first of all, because that now may cut certain imports. And secondly, how those products now could be useful in other countries. Mm-hmm. And that approach is going to help us quite a big deal in earning forex for our country, because we earn forex mostly through NGOs.
Yeah.
Most forex for the country come through NGOs, right? Mm. Not exports.
Yes.
Yeah. So first of all, the central message for me, the central message is innovation. The challenge is once a person mentions innovation, people think technology, people think engineering. No, innovation is simply using groundnuts to make cooking oil, using groundnuts to make butter, to make a product out of it. You know, that's the thinking that I want startup entrepreneurs to have, to think creatively with the resources that we have, with the skills that one has. What creative things can they produce from that, right? Mm. We talk about Malawi being an agricultural economy. True, we produce so many types of crops. But what do? We export them raw.
Yeah.
But on a small scale, what we should be thinking, what can we do with this? Cornflakes is made out of corn. Has anyone ever thought of, can I make cornflakes from corn that we produce in Malawi?
Yeah.
What can I do with soybeans? What can I do with that? Like, ask such questions, you know? What can I do with tomatoes? We import tomato sauce. Can we make our own tomato sauce in Malawi? Like, these are the questions that small businesses need to have in their head. And in all of this, they have to think about innovation, how they can create new things from the resources that are available, you know? And it applies even to services, you know? In this country, you'd see companies from UK, from so many different countries, those companies coming to establish themselves in Malawi, and what they do is consultancies. Like, okay, you know Gada World, right? And what do they do? Security. Like, G4S is a UK company.
Yeah.
What they do in Malawi? Security.
Exactly.
Like, are you telling me we had to get a company from UK to offer security services in this country? It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. That's like a basic service. Yeah. Mm. So this is the kind of thinking that small businesses need to have, like to have an innovative mindset, thinking beyond the norm. Maybe we prefer G4S and Guide Award because of the excellency of their services, but that's where the innovation is coming in. How innovatively can we think? You know, so innovation in terms of number one, the ideas themselves. Number two, how we can work together, you know, and this brings me back to the idea of working together in partnership. So if you see that on your own, you do not have the capacity to execute a certain business idea, or you do not have enough resources, then what do? You partner with others to do it. That's innovative thinking. Imagine that I need an investment. I'm trying to establish an enterprise that needs a 10 million investment, and all I have is 1 million kwacha. What do I do? I get 9 people more, each one with 1 million kwacha. We have 10 million, and we can do that business. Yeah. That's innovation there. You know, you're thinking innovatively. So the central message I have to small enterprises out there is be innovative. Be innovative in the idea you come up with, number one, and in how you run that idea. You have to be innovative. And the more we are innovative in our service provision, in the products that we create, the more we end up creating products that may curb the problem that we have of an increase in importation. You know, there was a report, they reported that importation of food, get me clear here, importation of food has increased in Malawi. Like, okay, how is that possible? This is an agricultural economy. How are we importing more food? And you know why? You know why? That report stipulates that this food is usually processed food.
Okay.
So it's because we are not processing. Simply put, we're not manufacturing. We're not innovating. That's what it says. That's what it means. We're not innovating.
And maybe there's also a trend that I've probably seen, and you've seen, and our audience pretty much have seen as well, where we invest in simple things. We love to import things like, for example, I'll talk about the same food or even maybe books, let's say stationery. I would rather just import stationery because I have a contract and I'll sell today and I have cash.
Yeah.
But if I say that I want to grow my own timber, or to buy from the farmers who have timber, and for me to turn that into paper and to do stationery in Malawi, then I find the whole thing to be so complex, and I'm more concerned about my bottom line and my cash today. So with that mindset, we cannot manufacture.
We can't. Yet, if you think long term, you realize that if you are the only paper making company in Malawi in 10 years' time, you will make lots of money. Today,
and in the region,
you may invest lots of Today, you may invest lots of money to set up that company, and it may take you a long time to break even. But after that time, the dividends will be so much. Think long term. Don't just think for today. For you need to have your bread on the table, but well, think about the future. You may have the whole bakery, you know.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I don't want to lose another point that you mentioned, that information is very simple. We need to find out what we are lacking and what the other countries want to buy from us. So I know that sometimes it's quite embarrassing when you walk into some of the offices and you realize they already have lots of information. For example, if you go to the Malawi Chamber of Commerce and Industry, you go to the Ministry of Trade, or you go to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, they have this information, which countries are importing what around the world, and which products out of that we can actually grow or manufacture in Malawi and export to those countries. It's quite amazing how much information we have.
You know, the trouble is people who a host of that information lack the initiative to, number one, orchestrate certain interventions to ensure that the ideas in those documentations are implemented. Because if you know that China is looking for product A, B, C, D. Why then don't you come up with an intervention which will involve young people who are not employed right now? There are so many of them, to ensure that that intervention is able, number one, to create jobs, number two, create import commodities. It's the same message that I have of people not thinking about national building. Because if you have that information, you share it.
Yeah.
You share it. You find ways of sharing that information. But more importantly, coming up with substance, I should put it that way. Coming up with substance from the information that we have. That's what's lacking. Because even if I may go to their offices and say, I'm looking for this information, they may not provide it to me.
Yeah.
If I don't, it's not even publicly available.
Yeah. We're not publishing. It's supposed to be available on the government websites.
Yes. It's supposed to be available there. It should be accessible easily, you know, but you will not find it there. So it's difficult to, you know, coming from like someone who is not in control of that information and they may not have an idea whether that information is available. It's difficult to try to make use of that information because in the first place, you don't know, you know. So there's lack of awareness of what's available. So yeah. I would say the ministries, the organizations that possess this information should ensure that the nation is aware of that. I like what National Planning Commission is doing nowadays. After developing the Malawi 2063 vision, they have started to break down the vision. You know, they're breaking down, they're having awareness campaigns, they're having meetings, they're programs on the radio, they're programs on TV. What they're trying to do is to inform the nation of what's available. And this is what is supposed to happen to each one of these brilliant publications that they have in their offices.
Yes.
Make people aware of what's available. And number two, come up with interventions. With those documents, you can literally write proposals and get funding and establish an enterprise. You know?
I agree.
You can do that.
And I know that this subject is open-ended. We can talk about development companies. We can talk about everything that's supposed to be there to galvanize the economy. But I would like to concur with you that the current administration, there are things that they are doing right. There are things that they are ticking the boxes. And hopefully, given time, on the same trajectory and listening to people, would definitely get to what people have touted as our canon. I think we are not there yet.
We're not there yet. We're not there yet.
But at the same time, I like to say, just the same way Moses did in the Bible, he saw the land, but he was not the one to lead the people there. Joshua actually did. Joshua is the one who took the people across the Jordan. And also it takes us who are being led to really get into the land and discover the milk and honey and try to push the leadership to discover where the gold is. I think it's very important.
Absolutely.
The wisdom that you've shared, Bright, has been so deep and it's quite generational. My only prayer is our audience and both of us would run with this wisdom and run with the message so that it will not just end as an episode within the Suits and Sandals podcast, but it indeed has to bring out that leadership and legacy element that each one of us should be able to run with it. And I don't want to end, because talking about publications, you've written books, just as you mentioned as well. I'm just curious, how many books, again, what are the subjects that you cover in the books? And if you still are publishing or they are online or you have hard copies, how can people access those books?
Yeah, so I said I've written 6 books, most of them are about business, but I've also written just books on personal development. Yeah, these books are available on Amazon. I think on Amazon there should be one book. One of the books, I took it down because I want to rework on it. I'm working on a second edition of that book.
Okay.
So I took it down. Yeah, I don't want it to be distributed anymore.
All right.
I'm coming up with a better version of that book. Yeah, some of them are available on my website, capitalistjones.com. Awesome. And for your information, the books that I sell are only two. Four of them are available for free download. So if you go to my website or capitalistjones.com, be able to download up to four books for free.
So I think we should, what we should do, Bright, we're going to have the link of your websites on the show notes. Okay. And we're going to also have a link and the titles of your books so that our audience should be able to freely access them and to buy what they need to buy. That's very important.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
And regarding your advisory business, I know that you have created multiple companies with your partners. Would you want to talk more about any of your businesses and what you're offering?
Yeah, so I have a consultancy company called Capitalist Jones. So Capitalist Jones is a business consultancy where I deal with business advisory, as you mentioned, and other services such as developing economic interventions for could be NGOs, could be individuals or politicians that are trying to come up with interventions for their communities. I'm able to do that. Business development, market analysis, research, all these things, capacity development, I do them under Capitalist Jones. I find fun in that. It's an exciting thing. Yeah, I also run a tech company. It's called Techulis. So Techulis, it's an acronym for Technologically Customized Learning Systems. So we were basically just developing digital systems for education, but we branched out into services as well. So developing softwares, mobile application, networking systems. So anything technology. We do that. Those are the two companies that I run, the Capitalist Jones and Techulis.
And I can see that's already feeling so busy and so heavy. So you are a busy man. You are not idle.
Pretty much, yeah. No, I'm not an idle man.
Awesome, man. No, it's been awesome and it's been a delight, Bright, to host you on Suits and Sandals. And definitely, this is not the last time that I'm hosting you. I believe you have lots of value that you need to offer to the nation of Malawi beyond the borders and for the continent. And it would be a great delight just to bring you back on the podcast so that you can share more of what you need to drop into the ecosystem.
I'm pretty sure I'll be right back here. And thank you so much for hosting me.
So to our audience, this has been Moses Chavi, your host, bringing you again this rich and value-packed episode. My thanks once again to Brad Chidumeni for the content that he's been able actually to bring forward to you. And I believe that you've benefited from this and you're going to run with the baton just as we've agreed. Until the next episode, see you.